The opinions expressed in this program reflect only those of the participants and are not necessarily those of the sponsors, management, or staff of WTBQ Radio or FST Broadcasting Corporation.
Good morning and welcome to Health Matters. Why? Because your health does matter. My name is Peter Fallon. I'm the Director of Education at A&T Healthcare. Joining me this morning is my wife, Ann Fella, who is the Regional Director of Patient Services and Director of Quality Assurance at A&T Healthcare. Ann, give our listening audience of WTBQ a good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, and joining us this morning, we're very happy to have Mr. Craig Cherry. He's the Deputy Commissioner of Emergency Services, as well as with Emergency Management. And today's topic is going to be on emergency preparedness. Craig, could you give our listening audience a loud good morning?
Good morning, Peter. It's a pleasure to be here this morning.
Thank you so much for coming with your busy schedule and everything, but this is really very important information that you want to share with our listening audience at WTBQ. A&T Healthcare, as I always say, is a home care agency with offices in Newburgh, Kingston, Mount Kisco, New Jersey, and New York City, and our corporate office is in New City, New York, which is in Rockland County. We at A&T, we're very honored to be broadcasting every Thursday morning, and we've made your listening audience of WTBQ to be part of your Thursday mornings, and we thank you so much. We talk about health-related topics and subjects, and as I always say, we're not controversial, contentious, or confrontational, but we are engaging, informative, and I want to say entertaining. I think that's always important. As I say, we do accept questions on the topics that we are presenting or any comments that you may have. And the number that you can reach is 845-651-1110. That's easy to remember. That's the call letters, call numbers, 1110. And again, thank you so much for letting us be a part of your Thursday morning. Okay, before we get started, I want to do a couple of details. As you know, A&T Healthcare, we do have training for individuals if they would like to become a personal care aide or home healthcare aide. We have classes scheduled for New City in September, Newburgh, we have it in October, and there's also one training in Kingston that'll also, which will begin in November. So just call any of the direct offices. You can find our phone numbers on our website, A&T Healthcare. As I said, it's not an open enrollment. When I say not an open enrollment, it doesn't mean that someone would like to take the class and as such they're going to get in, but you would have to be interviewed. You have, like the paperwork and things like that. And if you are accepted, you have a great opportunity. There's no charge, of course, for taking the exam, but it is important that you have like a good standard and you really want to do, this is the profession that you really would like to do. As I'm saying, Ann, the numbers just keep getting larger and larger on Facebook.
Oh, you're going to quiz me again.
Yeah, last time I said to you, how many people do you have on Facebook? It was like 120. No, we're over 1,000.
I think it was a little bit more like 1,700.
Yeah. No, that's just great. But please go to Facebook and like us and give us a rating. The other thing that I wanted to say is that we do have on our website all these broadcasts that we've been doing in WTBQ. Well, since March, is it in? Wow. Anyway, they are available on our website. And what we do is all the different topics that we had. I remember Lyme disease. We also had it on, physical therapy. We've had it on hospice. We've had it on, music therapy. So we have all the different topics. They are available. So if there's something that's, may interest you, please just go to our website and listen. And, of course, this show will also be downloaded. So if we hear that there's some horrific event that may be happening, that would be a good time maybe like just to review it. The other thing, as I always say, is that I am participating in the Dancing with the Stars. No, not on ABC. This will be on United Hospice, and I'll be one of the dancers. It's a wonderful cause, but if you go to Rockland United Hospice, you can see my picture there, and if you like to vote for me, you can, and even if you don't vote for me, vote for someone else, because it really is for a very good cause, and I'm doing pretty good. I don't know. Am I doing pretty good, Anna?
You're doing, I've seen a big improvement.
It's a lot. Real quick, this is like the fourth time this is happening. This is a running joke, Craig, that we have, is that every time we do a show on WTBQ, it seems that the Journal News kicks in and starts talking about it. Well, sure enough, last we were talking about, medical marijuana. And anyway, it's the next day. It says, synthetic pot ban expanded, New York prohibiting to include covered new chemical compounds. So they had all the stuff that we had discussed on our particular
with
show.
Our pharmacist. Our in-house pharmacist almost.
That's right. And what's that expression? Imitation is the greatest form of flattery. Well, I tell you. We've been.
So we'll see if they have an article on emergency preparedness.
Okay.
If you want to show me a few of your dance moves, I'll be glad. Glad to describe them to the audience.
Okay.
I don't know. We might know.
All right. Let's get started with the show. We're talking about emergency preparedness, and one of the things that's always very important is that I know Ann and I, when you're caring for patients or resident in a nursing home, what have you, you have an ultimate responsibility to make sure if there is an emergency that they are going to be safe. However, what you do have to remember is that even yourself in your own home, you have to be prepared for. And those are the different issues that we will be talking about. And as I said before, we do accept calls 651-1110. Before we get started, Craig, could you tell the listening audience something about yourself? Go ahead.
Sure, Peter. Well, first of all, I'm born and raised in Orange County, Port Jervis, on the other side of the county. I was a police officer for 32 years over in Port Jervis, and I was the police chief there for a number of years, and came to emergency services in 2008, and it's been a great several years there. I've enjoyed working with Orange County and the communities and working to make sure that we have a comprehensive response and plans for any type of emergency in the county. And hopefully today we can tell the public what they can do to better prepare themselves and what the individual communities and the counties are doing as well in regards to planning and mitigating for hazards.
I always know that with emergency preparedness, there are certain events that you do have a heads up on. Heads up on if there was a hurricane, even like a blizzard and stuff like that. But let's get started. Can you give me an overview of what services Orange County Department of Emergency Services provides to the residents of Orange County?
Sure. Well, a lot of people here, Orange County Emergency Services, they just don't quite understand what that umbrella title means sometimes. It could be a little confusing. But basically, we're an umbrella of services for the county. Orange County Emergency Services has five different departments. We have our 911 communications, which centralizes 911 dispatch for the county residents. That's one division. We answer approximately 250,000 calls for service a year through our 911 center. It's a very busy operation. We have our Division of Fire Services under our coordinator, Vinnie Tancaselli, and the Division of Fire Coordination provides training throughout the county for firefighters, provides specialty teams through coordinating our volunteers through our tech rescue and our hazmat team. Mm-hmm. We have our division of EMS, which centralizes EMS, or EMS coordinator. Mm-hmm. Frank Cassonite and his staff work with local EMS to have a coordinated effort for EMS services. Mm-hmm. We have our division of police services, which we coordinate efforts such as DOT BWI programs, the traffic safety programs, grant funding, and police record systems, so we coordinate that effort. Of course, we have emergency management, which all layers of emergency management, whether they be preparedness, planning, mitigation, recovery, we work on all levels of emergency management.
I have a question, Craig. You said about 911. Is there, I know sometimes when it first came out, there was a lot of, I don't want to say abuse, but inappropriate 911 calls. So, gee, I have a flat tire or something like that. Has that been a decrease in the inappropriate calls for 911 or?
I think as people are being educated, the importance of what 911 is for, that they understand. And also with the cell phone, with the ability to know where calls come from today.
Wow, yes, even on cell phone. Yeah.
And once in a while, you get a person who actually does call because of some thing that just you would not believe they'll call 911 for, and we deal with it. But
well, I guess, you would be a good resource, I guess, for something else. Though I one time I was on the LIE, and we had a flat tire. And my friend and I were looking like, who should we call? Well, eventually, we just called 911.
That was the correct,
thing to do. Yep, because we weren't like sure, like, is that, it's a flat tire, but here we are on a very busy highway, and we certainly weren't going to be able to get out. And actually, the tow truck that came, he wouldn't change the tire there either. He towed us off the highway.
So exactly.
That is an appropriate reason, believe it or not, to call.
What is the proper way to make an... I did make my first 911 call this year, and I was very nervous about it. What is the proper way, if you're going to give a 911 call, what is the proper information that you should be relaying to the dispatcher?
What's your location, and what is the problem, are the two most important things we need
know. That's it. Okay.
Yeah. Yep. And the rest of it we can get later. We need to know where you are and what your problem is. Things like phone numbers, your name, any other of those variables we can get down the road through extra questioning. Right. But in order to get help there right away, those are the two most important
things.
And I do know, like, after I made the call, they said if there are any problems, like, please call back. But they said they were, someone was having difficulty breathing. That's what it was. And I'll never forget it. I was very, very astutely, I stood outside, and sure enough, the ambulance went past it. So I ran up the hill. No, it's over here. The police were there first. Mm-hmm. They were there. Oh, no problem. But then I just ran over there. So it was kind of like, I was very concerned. But they did say, if there's anything else, like, please call us back. Tell us a little bit about the history of disaster preparedness in Orange County, Craig. Because how long have you been with them since 2008?
Eight. Yep.
Okay. Okay.
Actually, seven.
Okay.
In 2008, we moved our emergency services center into the current 911 center.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been with them personally since 2007.
Okay, we've certainly had a lot of activity since then.
Yes,
our
we have.
Weather and such.
emergency management actually gets its roots back with the old Civil Defense Act back in 1951. We all remember the get under your desk
that's
drills.
That's right. Line up in the hallway.
Line up in the hallway. And that's really...
That was it.
And that's really where emergency management got its roots. And the civil defense law, federal government enacted the Civil Defense Act in 1951, which started the requirements for training for, at that time, unfortunately, Cold War.
Right.
And then New York State in the mid-70s passed a series of laws which invoked a section of a law called Article 2B, which allows for a state of emergency to be declared. And at that time... it was all moved from civil defense to all hazard approach for planning for preparation for life and property.
Wow. You're listening to Health Matters. This is A&T Healthcare. And when we come back, we'll talk more about who's a part of the disaster preparedness efforts in Orange County.
This is Tom Babington, Vice President of A&T Healthcare. A&T Healthcare, created in 1984 by two nurses, is a family-owned and operated home health agency managed by professional nurses. We have set the highest standards of quality care. A&T Healthcare provides a full range of in-home and private duty nursing services, from live-in to hourly home health aides and companions who can assist with basic daily care needs. We also have highly trained, experienced, and skilled nurses who are qualified to provide all levels of medical case management services. A&T also offers private duty home health aides, as well as private nurse placement for patients who are hospitalized and may have special needs or require extra attention. A&T Healthcare is dedicated to providing high-quality home health services for caregivers and families who are caring for loved ones at home with dignity. A&T provides home health services for newborns to seniors and is a New York State licensed service agency serving Rockland, Westchester, Orange, Dutchess, Putnam, Green, Ulster, Sullivan, Nassau, and Suffolk counties, as well as the five boroughs of New York City and New Jersey. When you contact A&T Healthcare, one of their trained and dedicated skilled nursing professionals will provide you with answers to those complicated questions at the time when you truly need someone to take your hand and help you through the maze of healthcare. For more information, please visit our website, at-healthcare.com, or call 845-638-4342 and get the answers that will give you peace of mind.
Hi, this is Stacey Lawrence of the Greenwood Lake Garden Center, here with my co-host,
Kevin Sweeney of the Windermere Agency.
We would love it if you all would join us every Friday from 11 to 12 on WTBQ for Greenwood Lake Radio.
All Greenwood Lake, all the time.
Hey everybody, this is Rachel Ray. Join me today and every weekday with Rach on the radio. I'll have tips to save you money, celebrity chit-chat, and of course, food. All from the kitchen table of our Emmy Award-winning show, Rachel Ray.
Weekdays at 12:30.
WTBQ. And welcome back to Health Matters. And as I always say, why? Because your health does matter. We have Craig Cherry, who's the Deputy Commissioner of Emergency Services and Emergency Management, and we're talking about emergency preparedness. I just have a quick comment, but Dan in the control room, I don't know, Craig and Ann, he's not stopped smiling since we walked in, and I'm sure it's something to do with the Mets. There's another fact. Pick up the Webster Dictionary, and if you look up Mets fan, you can see what Dan looks like. His picture's posted there in the dictionary, okay?
Sorry, Dan, Yankees fan.
Yeah, we have a mix in our house.
Okay, let's get back. Craig, who is a part of the disaster preparedness efforts in Orange County?
It's a combination of effort with all of our community partners and the not-for-profit agencies that are out there. Many of our partners include local government, of course. We have our county agencies such as our health department, our social services, mental health, DPW. Our utilities are a big partner, the Red Cross.
It really encompasses all areas of government. I mean, you don't it's very extensive.
When you start to think of the different layers that are in the background of a disaster for needs, especially for needs for persons in crisis, mm-hmm. everything from shelter to water to food to recovery. It just, there's a lot of different spindles off of that.
They said with mental health, how is that incorporated?
I mean, many times mental health is an issue for some people that have been affected extremely by disaster. I mean, people who lose everything,
right?
Struggle to get back. And it does. We provide mental health services through our Department of Mental Health to help people for a variety of reasons. And we cannot discount the disaster as one of those.
Yeah.
And we still see recovery from Superstorm Sandy, especially in New Jersey, the Jersey Shore. There's still, a lot of things that have not returned. And that's got to be completely overwhelming for people.
Recovery is a very long part of the process. Mm-hmm. It takes years to recover. From a financial side as well, we're still filing recovery claims to FEMA for Irene and Sandy today.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's how many years ago?
Yeah.
Irene was 11, 2000.
Yeah.
Good. So maybe you could tell us a little bit, what are some of the most common hazards or threats to Orange County that you deal with? Because I know even though you're dealing with things, you're also drilling for the potentials.
Right. Well, even though, the snapshot of people say, well, yeah, it's floods and hurricanes or floods and high winds.
Yeah.
But there's many different layers of hazards that we have to plan for. And what each county is required to do with the State Office, Department of Emergency Services and Homeland Security is we have to provide what's called a self-assessment. You're required to submit a self-assessment of our hazards and our risk. And they go everywhere from drought to flood to hurricanes, blizzards, radiological, and you have to rate where your hazards are. I mean, obviously in Orange County, our hazards are flooding and high wind events, and at times blizzard. Those are our high ones. So we do plan and train for those. We also have a piece of the Indian Point nuclear power plant training.
Now, are you part of that? Like, I was just going to say, you said Orange County, but I always remember living in Rockland County that was always the thing about Indian Point. But
we are part of that. Yes.
Wow.
The counties of Orange, Putnam, Westchester, and Rockland are in that planning zone. We just had a full-scale training exercise, a four-county and state training exercise just last week, actually.
Wow. Yeah. The one thing that I remember, I don't know, it's not a perfect system, but from what I recall, it was always the people that lived in Haverstraw, which is close to the Hudson River, they would go first, and then they go to the people in New City, then they would go second. You worked your way up in groups, but realistically, if I'm in a new city and there's something happening in Indian Point, I'm not going to wait for my friends from Hampshire to go. I'm going to start jettisoning myself.
Now.
I'll be shuffling. So,
you do. People panic
and
they hit the road. Planning.
We're required every 2 years to pass a federally approved evaluation, and every off year we do a state observed. So that's what we just completed this year, and we had a FEMA drill last year to make sure that our county has passes, to make sure that we are ready for anything that may happen.
I mean, you have a big airport up here, too.
Yes,
and I'm sure there's planning surrounding that as well.
Yes, we have drills and exercises. Our fire service does drills and exercises mm-hmm. there for mm-hmm. responding to air crashes.
Right.
Yeah, one of the things, speaking of the airport, one of the things we are doing right now, mm-hmm. not only do we prepare for disasters, we also work with large events.
You have a big one coming.
We have a big one coming. Give a shout out about the air show. Go ahead.
We do have the air show is on.
All right.
The weekend of the 29th of August, that Saturday and Sunday. And emergency services, emergency management has been a part of that planning effort from the beginning.
I imagine it would be, absolutely.
I mean, whenever you have a large gathering, first of all, a large gathering does require approval. There's health approval. There's mm-hmm. you have to submit that plan to emergency management for us to sign off on. And we're going to assist there that day for those 2 days, along with the law enforcement, EMS, and fire for coordinating the effort. We'll have a command post set up. And we have a plan, an operational plan, and God forbid something happens at the air show.
You do have to plan ahead, though.
Yeah. I mean. Yeah.
But we've already ordered fair skies, so.
That's a good.
Are the Blue Angels, going to be there?
I don't believe it's the Blue Angels. I know the Raptors are going to be there.
Okay.
A couple other groups. I don't have the list in front of me, but I see the list. I do know it's going to be exciting.
Oh, that! We went to Baltimore, and the Blue Angels were there, but they have to practice the day before, and then we were driving, and it looked like a flock of birds were flying. I said, no, those are jet planes that are going. So.
But I'm sure if you reach out to our county exec's office, they're doing a lot of promoting for it because it's great for the county. And
absolutely. This is
that'll
big,
certainly
this is a very big event.
Yeah. It is.
It's a very big event.
Let me ask you a question, Craig, about the technology that's used in emergency management. I always have to say this. I remember with Superstorm Sandy, is that if anyone saw that movie with George Clooney and Mark Wahlberg, it was The Perfect Storm.
Yes.
It's like the movie, this is coming here, this is coming here, this. And I remember them saying, this is like this perfect storm. It's coming here, it's coming here. And they, you know, they said, this is serious, this is serious. And they really absolutely called it to the letter. How did the technology play into that?
If you ever had the opportunity to come to our 911 center, you'll see our emergency operations center. I mean, we are wired with technology there. We have we can stream in live video. We have a direct connect with many of our partners out there, National Weather Service. We also provide we use a management tool. It's called DLAN. It's a software application that allows us to manage a storm, track resources, mm-hmm. Request damages, archive that for the needs that may come down. That is connected to the State Division of Emergency Management, Office of Emergency Management. So we have a common software platform that we use to keep up on what's going on for an event real time.
Now, how is that information relayed? Let me share an experience that I had. I remember when I was with the DDSO, I was always part of the emergency preparedness. So I used to get the notifications if there was ever a warning. So it was a Sunday morning. I was driving my daughter back to her home, and in the morning, and all of a sudden it was on the Tappan Zee Bridge, and the wind was so quick, and I said, "Oh my God, what is it?" And then I just drove away, and then it just calmed down. The next morning when I came into work on Monday, they said, 8:30, tornado warnings at lower, South Nyack. And I said, that was what I was involved in. And I was just awestruck that, wow, like 8:30, that's right when I was there. And right at the beginning of the Tappan Zee Bridge. So I said, boy, they really, someone's doing stuff right.
Well, one of the things that everyone can do, of course, is sign up for New York Alert.
Okay.
If you're not familiar with New York Alert, just Google that. Go on the website, and you'll see where you can sign up.
What do you get?
I think it was last week or the week before. We had some flood warning.
It makes an eerie sound.
My phone had the emergency sound.
I said, what happened? What's that? It was like.
And I was in my car, and it came over the Bluetooth. So mm-hmm. I was like, what is that noise? But it was the alert.
Yes.
It was the alert about the storm.
Well, you can sign up for any number of alerts from weather, traffic. You pick regions.
Right.
So you don't have to get the entire state.
Right. You don't need the whole. Yeah. You really want your area, of course. Though whenever my kids are away, I always check the weather and what's happening in those towns as well.
I did that myself with my daughter. I signed up for New York Alert for when she was in college for that area as
well. You want to know what's going on there, right?
Sure. Yeah, so it's a great
tool.
They're
never going to tell you.
No.
Only when they need you.
That's right.
Now, does all this work, there's a lot of effort, and it's like anything, you have to, it's like I said, once you do a fire drill in your home, you should do it now when nothing's going on. You don't decide to do it. And I gave that, I always remember the time when we had Superstorm Sandy. We had no electricity at all in the house, and not that Ann and I had this big palatial a bedroom, but I remember when I was leaving the bedroom, I wound up walking into the closet. Now, this is my bedroom, which, you know, and but that's something where you really have to prepare things, because remember, that was the thing when there was no light, there was no ambient light. Now, ambient light is like the clock radio that's on, something like those are all the things. Tell us about, you know, that's why you really have to, this is something that you really have to be preparing for before it happens, okay? So there's no stress or anything like that, and, you know, again, you're not going to be able to see things as you normally would.
I mean, we've all heard the phrase, have a plan, and it's right. A simple phrase, right. But it's one that we just take for granted every day. You know, when we get up in the morning, we have that plan of what we got to do to get ready, what we have to do to get out the door, go to work. We do that automatically every day. We don't really think about what could happen or what may go wrong in any given day. And you really do have to have a plan, especially for your family.
Absolutely. And you do. It's good because, you have to get into a different mindset, a different mode. Yeah. So
I mean, we're all guilty of, I guess, running to a Home Depot or Lowe's at the last minute for the batteries.
Okay, you're listening to Health Matters, and when we come back, we'll be talking about what citizens can do better to prepare for potential events such as storms or flooding or even power loss, which we started to talk about.
This is Tom Babington, Vice President of A&T Healthcare. A&T Healthcare, created in 1984 by two nurses, is a family-owned and operated home health agency managed by professional nurses. We have set the highest standards of quality care. A&T Healthcare provides a full range of in-home and private duty nursing services, from live-in to hourly home health aides and companions who can assist with basic daily care needs. We also have highly trained, experienced, and skilled nurses who are qualified to provide all levels of medical case management services. A&T also offers private duty home health aides, as well as private nurse placement for patients who are hospitalized and may have special needs or require extra attention. A&T Healthcare is dedicated to providing high-quality home health services for caregivers and families who are caring for loved ones at home with dignity. A&T provides home health services for newborns to seniors and is a New York State licensed service agency serving Rockland, Westchester, Orange, Dutchess, Putnam, Green, Ulster, Sullivan, Nassau, and Suffolk counties, as well as the five boroughs of New York City and New Jersey. When you contact A&T Healthcare, one of their trained and dedicated skilled nursing professionals will provide you with answers to those complicated questions at the time when you truly need someone to take your hand and help you through the maze of healthcare. For more information, please visit our website, at-healthcare.com, or call 845-638-4342 and get the answers that will give you peace of mind.
Hi, this is David Dirks, the host of the Dirks Outdoor Show. Call in as we discuss everything for the outdoor sportsman every Saturday at 7 a.m. right here on WTBQ Radio, worth listening to.
Hi, this is Dan Castricone. Join me every Thursday from 12 to 1 on WTBQ for the Dan Castricone Radio Show. We'll take your phone calls, have exciting guests, talk about current events, maybe a little politics. Thursdays from 12 to 1 on WTBQ.
WTBQ Weather.
We have a nice period of weather that's going to carry us right into the weekend. We're looking at sunny skies today in 80. Tonight, a few areas of fog. Otherwise, it'll be clear and cool in the low 50s. Partly sunny tomorrow after a few clouds come in the afternoon. We'll get into the mid-80s. Partly cloudy tomorrow night, 60s, and clouds and sun on Saturday. The high should stay in the middle 80s. From the WTBQ Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Tony Salimo.
Welcome back to Health Matters. My name is Peter Fella. I'm the Director of Education at A&T Healthcare. And joining me this morning is my wife, Ann Fella. And Ann is the Regional Director of Patient Services and the Director of Quality Assurance at A&T Healthcare. Joining us this morning is Mr. Craig Cherry, who's the Deputy Commissioner of Emergency Services and Emergency Management for Orange County. As I said before, A&T Healthcare, we're a home healthcare agency. We have offices in Newburgh, Kingston, Mount Kisco, New Jersey, New York City, and our corporate office is in New City, New York. Okay, we were talking earlier, before we had the break, we were talking about the technology, about how good it is. I want to share an experience that happened to me. I was working with the Department of Health, and remember when they had the blackout? I believe it was like either 2002, 2003, and it was from the grids. It was like the trees that were growing on the grids, and it just blacked out the whole East Coast. I was working at the Department of Health at the time in the city, and what happened was is that, you know, when I was able to get home, there was a, with all the technology that we have, there were three adult homes, because I oversaw the adult homes, that we were unable to make verbal communication to. Or like we called, there was nothing, it was busy, it was ringing, there was no communication. So what was necessary is that I had to go, and Ann, I'm still thanking you to this day, thank you for going with me, but we had to drive to Brooklyn and Manhattan. There were three adult homes to physically go there to see, is everything okay? And that's what we had to do. And it was so, first of all, I'm not familiar with driving in the city, never mind about Brooklyn, but then there were no lights or anything like that. But we did go to all three, and no, everything is fine, everything is fine. So it just shows you that sometimes with the technology, it may not work in a disaster. In fact, the other thing that happened is the phones, the telephones. The most basic phone where you would just pick up the phone and that was it, that worked. But any of the phones that had all the different speed dials, that had all the intercoms, that had all the bells and whistles on it, they did not work in a disaster. So always remember that. Always think, oh, I got my cell phone. I'm safe. I have my cell phone. Sometimes in a disaster, that might not be the case.
So why would the Department of Health or an organization want to make these visits? Well, for a lot of reasons. We want to make sure the people that are living there are okay. We also want to be sure if they need help, you know, you would be able then to contact emergency services. I know there's usually a command center that's active during an event, and they'd be able to get things out to people who need them, such as simple things like water,
exactly.
If that's or if they need to be evacuated, which would be something more serious. I know when working in the hospital in the nursing home, we used to have to shelter people who had oxygen that were on, you know, compressors that ran by electricity. They weren't able to use their oxygen at home, so they would have to be sheltered and things like that. And so that's why we do visits, you know.
But as I said, we had to physically drive there, and it was a daunting
task. And then if they needed something, we were able to, you would be able to contact emergency management.
Right. No, I had all, and they kept calling us, did you go there? And remember, I'll call you when I get there, all right? It's like, I felt like, you know, I had to be there by 8 o'clock. And, you know, and it's like here, I'm looking at the road, and they're asking me, are you there yet? And I said, you'll know when I'm there. Everything was happening and everything.
Because it makes everyone very anxious.
Yes, it does.
The emergency. So preparing for it is probably the most important thing. Even though you're anxious and your whole life could change very suddenly, if you've done some preparation, it will help you to get through it. So we should probably talk a little bit about how do we do that?
First of all, a great resource for people to look up for information on how to prepare is the federal government's ready.gov website. It has a list of suggestions, worksheets, worksheets that you can download, fill out, that you can keep yourself. It's a great resource for planning, you know, for your family, for at work and at school. The simple basic supplies that people always, we all know we're supposed to have some water around, at least a gallon per day per person, some food, enough to live for a few days.
Non-perishable foods?
Yeah, non-perishable foods, exactly. The radio, the first aid kit, the flashlight, you know, all those important things that, you know, you go down a checklist. Like I said, download one of these checklists from a site like ReadyGot.gov and make sure you have them. Like I said earlier, we're all guilty of, at the last minute, hoping we can get these supplies when we need them. And, not aside from the bread and milk runs.
Right. I mean, the snowstorms alone, it's like shopping carts full of goodies and things to do.
And you also have to have a good communications plan, because not necessarily everyone's going to be home at that time. Mm-hmm. You may have a child in school. You may be at work. You're all disengaged at different locations. And you need to have a good communications plan that, everyone knows that you say drill. No. If all of a sudden we need to get a hold of each other, how are we going to do that? You know, where's that meeting place going to be? If we can't meet home, where's that meeting place going to be? So you have to know those so you're not in a panic as to what to do.
Very important.
You know, one of the things that a lot of times come up, Craig, and just if you could reinforce this to our listening audience of WTBQ, is that they think, gee, if there's a blackout, I need candles. But candles are not really recommended to be walking around the house.
No, they're not. Candles. Nope.
If you have the big giant one that sits on a table, like one of those big ones, but could you talk more about that?
I mean, candles are, you know, you just have to use due care. If you end up having to use candles, you have to make sure you exercise, you know, very due care and control. Be careful with children, pets, with around candles. Right, but, you know, right. We do urge that you use have flashlights and other non-flammable sources of light. It's much safer, and it'll probably last you longer.
Yeah, and it is important to charge your cell phones and your devices. Because they have flashlights on them, too, a lot
yes,
of them.
So yeah, that's correct.
We kind of lived that way for about a week after Sandy.
And if you have a hard-line phone to your home, make sure you at least have one that works the good old-fashioned plug
good
it in the jack.
Fashioned, right.
Yes, yes.
Because
yes.
Most people have the electronic phones today, and they will not work.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and no, we all rely on the internet connections. Yeah. So.
No, and that's what I said. That's exactly what was experienced. I have a question now as far as like emergency preparedness, but has emergency preparedness changed since 9/11? Also like talking as far as like how does Orange County work with FEMA and, you know, the Office of Homeland Security? How's that?
Ever since 9/11, everything has changed in what we think as to what we have to prepare for. And that's changed, especially here in the metropolitan area, how we plan for acts of terrorism. Orange County does receive funding annually from the New York State Department of Homeland Security to better prepare ourselves to be ready to respond to any type of emergency, including terrorism. We use that funding to provide equipment, training, and resources to all of our police, fire, and EMS responses throughout Orange County. We work closely with the Department of Homeland Security. We receive monitor terrorism threats daily. We respond to our action plans. We even go as far as acts of terrorism that may involve outbreaks, dirty bombs, nuclear dirty bombs.
Yes, yes.
Or even outbreaks that just happened.
Anthrax. I was originally a microbiologist before I became a nurse, and all that stuff about anthrax and stuff that was getting all this attention. I remember that from my days working in the lab.
Not terrorism, but the recent Ebola outbreak
right.
scare
yes,
that
yes,
happened.
Yes, yes.
You know, all the counties of New York State had to sit down. We were on conference calls with the state health department, state health department, and working with Dr. Leva at the health department. Mm-hmm. We had to sit down. We had to draft a response plan for Ebola,
right.
A county response plan, right. And we worked to make sure.
Even
we
were right, and home care was also involved.
Well,
in
we did some planning. We weren't required, but we did some planning.
Yeah, like
but,
just said, had you
but you're right, just had to transport people.
Have you been here and that sort of stuff. Those were things that were talking
or just
about.
How to deal with panic.
Exactly.
Right.
Yep.
That is very important. Yeah, you know, people get nervous, they panic, and you know, they're looking for your help and guidance.
That's right.
I do remember this when I worked in New York City when I was with the Department of Health, and we did have to have annual drills. And this is one of the case in points is that when we had the drill, we had someone in the front with a large placard that said, "This is only a drill," because all of a sudden you see like several hundred people start to leave a particular building. And we didn't want to consider, wait, what's going on, like that kind of concern. And I also remember, I don't know if they'd ask me now, but I was one of the ones that was designated that if there were, let's say, an employee that needed extensive assistance, because again, you would not be using the elevators to go down. I was one of the
right.
person that was designated as far as going there, just to, we had certain chairs that we were able to utilize, but I was one of the ones that I would have to go to that person first. And if I was not off, there had to be another person that would then be going in. So there's all this connection that goes on, like we're not here at work every day or what have you. But that was one of the things that we had done as far as the preparation and talking about it. Like you do have to do it when right. it's not happening.
That's correct.
Okay, let me see. One more thing. Could you tell us I wanted to touch on this as far as, like, I know we have a lot of, like, animal lovers. I know Taylor's a big animal lover, Taylor Sterling, mm-hmm. our program director. Mm-hmm. How does emergency preparedness deal with pets? And I'm going to share an experience when I went to, when I was involved with the Department of Health. This was right after Hurricane Katrina. What had happened was is that there were so many, they went to evacuate. So they knock on the door, here, you have to evacuate. And they said, okay, fine, let me get my dog or let me get my cat. At which time they said, no, you can't take your dog, you can't take your cat. At which time they then said, that's okay, I'm not going. And unfortunately, the people that were saying, no, I'm not going, those were the frail and elderly yes. who really, you know, weren't like these tough young guys.
Vulnerable.
Yeah, the most person most vulnerable. And that's when they changed their mindset, because the purpose of emergency preparedness is that you want to save lives. So if you see a situation that's happened, but if you talk a little bit about that, Craig.
Well, one thing is for sure, always take your pet if you can. Do not leave a pet behind, because okay. once you leave them behind, they're certainly not going to be able to fend for themselves. And you're encouraged to bring the pet. And if you get to the point where you go to the shelter and there's no place for that, that's where those emergency managers at that location to try to come up with arrangements through their local shelters on how they're going mm-hmm. to house pets. But you know, do not leave your pet behind if you can. Most importantly, if you do have to leave or evacuate, you know, have that resource plan for your pet. Have a backup plan that maybe a friend network or relative network that can take the pet for mm-hmm. you. Maybe the pet can't go to the shelter, but someone else can take the pet for you. Mm-hmm. And that really emphasizes the need for pre-planning and early decision-making.
And also they say you should take a picture posing with
yes.
the pet
yep. Yep.
in case, and you always mm-hmm. have to have a, I'm sorry, I see this too much. You have to have a license on the dog, a collar with a license or some form of identification, but take a picture of the dog with you. And that's it.
And have a kit for your animal. Believe it or not, you got to make sure they have food for a couple of days.
Right.
Many animals take medication.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to also pack a little doggy bag for the
A little pet emergency kit.
That's right.
No, I know. Like I always say that you know, pets are so much a part of our culture, and that's what. And it was just that it did resonate. That wait a second, we can't be doing this. And as Ann said, they're the ones that are most vulnerable. But we do have to have a plan for that. There's a terrible story. It happened yesterday.
Yes,
it was a woman. The house was on fire, and she left, and then she went next door, and they called 911 on fire. And then she
went back for her pet.
Yes.
And then she didn't make it. I mean, that was the most heart-wrenching story. And I said, oh, boy, we're talking about emergency preparedness. So that's what's also important, like in the event of a fire and stuff like that, that, you know, where the pets are and you know, how to get out. And you need two means of egress from each room. People think, I just need two ways to get out of the house. No, it's more than that. It's two ways out of each room.
And I
always know that, and I know you've seen that when people make illegal apartments, that's where our first responders are vulnerable then, because when they go into a room, we say, well, there's a window here, but wait, there's no window here. There's
a
wall that's
right.
there, because they made the one bedroom into a two-bedroom. An illegal apartment, and that's what puts them at particular risk. Very unfortunate.
Well, leaving your home is one of the hardest things people can do. They you know, it's no one wants to leave their home.
Okay, you're listening to Health Matters, and when we come back, we'll continue to be talking about emergency preparedness and also as far as preparing for like storms, floods, and power losses.
Hello, this is Tom Babington, Vice President of A&T Healthcare. A&T Healthcare, created in 1984 by two nurses, is a family-owned and operated home health agency managed by professional nurses. We have set the highest standards of quality care. A&T Healthcare provides a full range of in-home and private duty nursing services, from live-in to hourly home health aides and companions who can assist with basic daily care needs. We also have highly trained, experienced, and skilled nurses who are qualified to provide all levels of medical case management services. A&T also offers private duty home home health aides, as well as private nurse placement for patients who are hospitalized and may have special needs or require extra attention. A&T Healthcare is dedicated to providing high-quality home health services for caregivers and families who are caring for loved ones at home with dignity. A&T provides home health services for newborns to seniors and is a New York State licensed service agency serving Rockland, Westchester, Orange, Dutchess, Putnam, Green, Ulster, Sullivan, Nassau, and Suffolk counties, as well as the five boroughs of New York City and New Jersey. When you contact A&T Healthcare, one of their trained and dedicated skilled nursing professionals will provide you with answers to those complicated questions at the time when you truly need someone to take your hand and help you through the maze of healthcare. For more information, please visit our website, at-healthcare.com, or call 845-638-4342 and get the answers that will give you peace of mind.
Hi, I'm Pat O'Dwyer. Join me on the Friday Roundtable for a provocative look at politics and the people in our Hudson Valley community on the Friday Roundtable at 9 a.m. on WTBQ.
Hi, this is Dr. David Leach, the superintendent of the Warwick Valley Central School District and host of Your Schools. Listen every Monday at 12 noon to learn what's happening in your schools right here on WTBQ, radio worth listening to.
WTBQ. Okay, and welcome back to Health Matters. My name is Peter Fella, I'm the Director of Education at A&T Healthcare. You know, I want to tell another story when I was with the Department of Health. This was at the Republican National Convention, which was held in Madison Square Garden. Well, my office was on 34th Street, and there was like a, I'm not sure, I think maybe
across
it was like
the street from the garden.
Right across from the garden, but there was like a 1 mile circumference is that anyone that worked within that range, you had to have an ID that let you, this is where I worked, so you could get in. And that was all done way beforehand. Mm-hmm. Now, I was also part of the OEM with the Department of Health, and then I also was with
what
the
is
Department
the OEM?
Of Health, the Office of Emergency Management. Office okay. of Emergency Management. Because I worked for the Department of Health, I was there for part of it, okay? And I oversaw like the home health care, your home health care as well as the adult home. So anyway, when I walked around, I had three IDs hanging down from me. And I always remember this. Don King, who was a very avid Republican, he was over there. Everyone surrounded him. So I called over to him. I said, hey, Don, you look really good on the Dennis Miller show. So he looks over at me, and he said, wait, this guy's got three. Everyone only has two or one. He has three. This guy, so he comes walking over to me and he's talking and everyone's checking out my, trying to read. I kept moving my shoulders so he was going back and forth, but he came over to me just to talk. I said, it was a very good show.
I thought you were really important.
And I think he wanted to ask me, who are you? Because I guess he was afraid. Would you, if I said,
I might know
you?
This guy.
I should know this guy, and I don't, but that was like a funny story that I remember. Let's just ask this as far as the, what the counties do, as far as like, you know, working together as far as mitigating some kind of a disaster. Tell us how that would work, Craig.
Yes. In order to qualify for FEMA recovery aid or flood mitigation aid or any type of aid to reduce risk in your community, FEMA requires that every municipality have a hazard mitigation plan, approved plan on file with FEMA. The short version is basically that the community goes out, identifies its potential risk for some type of disaster, whether it be flooding of an area, washout of streams, anything that could cause hazard-related damage down the end. And once this plan is approved, that qualifies you for future funding to correct that problem. We received the grant, Orange County received the grant just recently of about $225,000. So we're currently working with all of our local municipalities to develop an all-hazard county mitigation plan, which will be approved by FEMA. Mm-hmm. And once that plan is approved, it's good for 5 years. I know we're working in Warwick here. I know that Town Supervisor Sweeten's been at some of our meetings. It's been very engaging. And once that plan is adopted and drafted, it's approved by FEMA. So if there is a disaster or there's money available through for hazard mitigation repairs to infrastructure, you can say, look, I pointed out what my problems are in my community. We told you we needed this fixed.
Right.
It was flooded again or it was damaged again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You've made your case beforehand and not after.
Right.
So it's very important for communities to do that. It does help. It helps rebuilding and it helps when it comes time for funding.
You know, you talk about, you know, planning for community, even at home. You have to look around your home and say, okay, what's most vulnerable? You know, we had a storm a few years ago where there was all the snow that came down in October, And I didn't really think a lot about it, but we had several trees fall on our house.
Yeah.
We were very fortunate.
Really,
there was
like
no
five
serious
minutes,
damage.
But, oh, it
damage,
was...
but not no life-threatening damage or anything.
Mm.
But as it was happening, the kids looked at us and went, what should we do? I said, we have to go to the basement.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, yes.
But you're not thinking about, like... Where that hazard is, we have some huge trees right over our house.
And that was our question. And wait, do we get in the car and leave our house because we're surrounded by
trees falling down
all
over the place? Yep. We have to get to the basement. It's safest there to, you know, if a tree falls, most likely it's not going to get that far.
If you're actually in the middle of a storm and it's bad out, sheltering in place is always the best option.
You're right, is always
best. We get to the lowest point in the house where we're protected.
We had one tree fall that really only took out a couple of windows and
But had it been 10
deck.
Degrees to the left,
sure.
It would have
taken out three
bedrooms. Yeah, 10 degrees, 10
you
degrees.
Know, you think about how serious. So you do have to plan ahead. We weren't thinking we didn't think that snow was going to make such a difference, but it was October. There were leaves on the trees, and it was very serious. But if you plan a little bit ahead and you look at your house and say, where are the most vulnerable areas of my home? Well, your first upper level is going to be vulnerable to something like trees falling or roof caving in and things like that. Yeah. So, you know, you do have to even plan not only as a community but as an individual. So,
now, Ann, why don't you tell listeners about, like, with home care? Like, we're very involved. As I said, that whenever you're caring for patients or residents, that's your responsibility, but why don't you just share as far as what we do and what we did during Hurricane Sandy?
Absolutely. I mean, we do plan ahead. Even when we meet an individual for the first time and we're going to be providing home care services, we determine at that point what level of risk they are. So we have our higher risk patients who live alone, don't have family nearby, have equipment that needs to run on electric, have certain treatments that they require. Those are our most vulnerable individuals, people who can't leave their home, possibly.
And they have the emergency. That was one of the programs that we had, that we said that all the technology that they now have in the home care setting, that AMT is very much a part of it. So those are the ones that we have to, they have to have the generator, and they're the ones that
emergency backup plans. Right. So we take a look at each individual and we plan ahead, because if there is an event, who do we start with? We're going to start, of course, reaching out to our most high-risk individuals. So, of course, what we do is we practice. We go through the scenario in our office and say, okay, who do we identify? What are we going to tell them if there's a power outage or a snowstorm or an electrical storm or, you know, whatever the problem is? And then we see what they need, and we go through, you know, besides the food and water, do they have all their medication?
Yeah.
If they're not going to be able to get out, or do they have medication for, you know, well, we say 3 days, that 3 to 5 days is probably the right amount of time.
But I did drive to the different homes just to physically see.
And we sometimes have to go out and
touch
see
and
people.
Go, and you were just, hi, is everything okay? Was it warm and that sort of stuff?
Do they have enough blankets? It gets pretty cold if your heat's not on, even, you know, in October.
Well, you become that trusted friend that they need.
Right.
Yeah, so that's always important. But as I said, we do all this preparation, and they do happen. And that's where we're, but I think that was a good point about the technology.
Right.
And this has been a wonderful program. And Craig, I want to thank you so much for being here. Craig, is it possible you could come back again on the show?
It'd be my pleasure.
Oh, great. And listen, if there's any trouble with, please, but no, thank you so much. You were a wonderful.
I enjoyed
guest.
The time with you.
Very informative. I think that's important. I do want to remind our listening audience, if you could please like us on Facebook. That's very important. If you want to hear a rebroadcast of this, if you missed any part of it, it's very easy. You just have to go to our website, A&T Healthcare, and you'll be able to get it. As I always say when I end, please remember to follow us on Facebook. And remember, stay healthy, because your health matters. And to you, your family, and friends, all the best. And I'll see you next week, okay? Have a good one. Thank you for joining us. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. Take care, Peter.